Jeff's Guitar Clinic is a multifaceted shop offering guitars, amplifiers, and all accessories, guitar lessons for all ages, and instrument repair of the highest quality. Take the scenic drive to beautiful Fort Atkinson and see what total customer satisfaction is all about. Call Jeff's Guitar Clinic today at 920-723-1733. That's Jeff's Guitar Clinic at 920-723-1733. Jeffsguitar.com.
Welcome to another podcast. It's LiesOffice.com, brought to you by our friends at the United Steelworkers. Joining us now from Denver, it is John Nichols from the Capital Times. You are in Denver or just Colorado?
I mean, I've been in Colorado. It happens I'm in Boulder.
Oh, Boulder,
is,
sure.
You know, yeah, it's like...
just north of Denver.
To Madison. It aspires to Madison.
Mm-hmm.
And vice versa, I suppose.
It's richer than Madison.
Yeah, it's a notable difference. If you were to take the state government out of Madison and just have the university, right, as that kind of a central organizing premise,
yeah,
as well as some tech companies, uh-huh, that would be... that's what it is. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, it's a more expensive town.
Right. Yeah. Well, anything going on in Washington?
Oh, my goodness.
Or should I say New York City?
Well, it's a little bit of that intersection of the two, isn't it? And but I can tell you where there isn't something interesting going on, or less interesting than there was, South America. Because as we speak, Trump just canceled his... what was going to be his very high profile and very important trip to South America for the big kind of summit of, you know, Latin American countries, and said, no, he's going to stay in the White House and monitor world affairs. And something tells me that this decision not to go on, frankly, what, you know, an important, very important international trip might have... I certainly think it has something to do with Syria. I'll accept that. But I suspect it might have something to do with other developments of the moment.
As he was flanked by Mike Pence and John Bolton.
Yep.
This is Donald Trump at the White House after learning that Michael Cohen's hotel, office, and a home, mm-hmm, computer taken. This is Donald Trump yesterday, President Trump.
Just heard that they broke into the office of one of my personal attorneys, good man, and it's a disgraceful situation. It's a total witch hunt. I've been saying it for a long time. I've wanted to keep it down. We've given, I believe, over a million pages worth of documents to the special counsel. They continue to just go forward, and here we are talking about Syria. We're talking about a lot of serious things with the greatest fighting force ever. And I have this witch hunt constantly going on for over 12 months now. And actually much more than that. You could say it was right after I won the nomination it started. And it's a disgrace. It's frankly a real disgrace. It's an attack on our country in a true sense. It's an attack on what we all stand for. So when I saw this and when I heard it like you did, I said, that is really now in a whole new level of unfairness. This is the most biased group of people. These people have the biggest conflicts of interest I've ever seen. Democrats, just about all, either Democrats or a couple of Republicans that worked for President Obama. They're not looking at the other side. They're not looking at the Hillary Clinton horrible things that she did and all of the crimes that were committed. They're not looking at all of the things that happened that everybody is very angry about, I can tell you, from the Republican side, and I think even the independent side. They only keep looking at us. So they find no collusion, and then they go from there and they say, well, let's keep going.
This was an FBI raid.
Well,
this was not a Mueller raid.
But wasn't it overseen, or at least, you know, peripherally the work of, how would they, maybe the U.S. attorney in southern Manhattan?
Yeah, that's somebody that Donald Trump put there. Yeah, that's Donald Trump's appointment.
I mean, so he's sort of like, he's kind of missing some threads here. But with that said, that is the kind of, kind of rambling, don't really know where to end, rant.
Yeah, I only played a small portion of it. We would have been here for hours.
Yeah, it's the kind of thing where you don't usually hear people who are in a good place talking like that. If indeed there was an FBI raid, number one, this is a rather unprecedented thing in the history of the country. But if there was an FBI raid, what every lawyer, political aide, functional person around a president would say is, this has nothing to do with me. This has nothing to do with my presidency. It's a terrible distraction. It'll be resolved quickly, I'm quite sure. But now let's get back to business, right? That's what anyone would tell you to say. And the fact, you understand now, when he starts rambling and ranting like this, do you know who gets the most scared in the world about something like that?
Sean Hannity?
No, well, Sean maybe. No, it's his lawyers, right?
Does he have lawyers?
Because, well, he's got to have a couple. I think there's some mall lawyer from out of Tennessee representing them. But, I'm not kidding, though. This is everything you would tell someone not to do. And I know he's, like a maverick or whatever. But when I was listening to that, I couldn't help but thinking of, this is the kind of thing, like toward the end of a movie, right? When, somebody just breaks down and starts to say things that fully incriminate them. Trump didn't fully incriminate himself anymore, with that than many of the other things he said. But it does not sound like he's in a good place. And from a serious standpoint, this matters, because right now this president has several things he is dealing with, which are tightrope walks. These are things that would be hard challenges for the best of presidents. What's happened in Syria creates pressures and pulls and demands that are of global consequence and demand, like kind of laser sharp diplomacy, as well as a really serious consideration of how the U.S. might respond either unilaterally or in the context of other countries. Secondly, he has this broader inquiry, which does seem to be coming to a head separate from the Cohen raid. And so you have that, again, that very focused, very difficult challenge of, how does he respond? Does he fire Mueller? Does he take steps to undo this investigation? And both of those things, I just want to emphasize, both of those things are epic challenges for a president to face. And the fact that he does not seem to have control of himself at such a moment ought to make a lot of people very concerned.
It's an amazing...
Not to put a dark spin on it.
It's an amazing moment how many different things are coming at him at once.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I ask you, when it comes to the Republicans, they're already in trouble. They're in trouble.
Bad trouble.
Just on policy.
Yeah.
What would they do? What would they do if he fired Rosenstein? What if Mueller fires Rosenstein?
He fires Rosenstein.
Yeah.
And puts somebody
Excuse
in
me.
And fires
Mueller. Yeah. Right.
It's
I didn't mean Mueller.
No. It's a hard set of steps to walk up.
No, I just confused the words.
No,
but anyway, if he fires Rosenstein, somebody else comes in and fires Mueller. That doesn't end the evidence. The evidence is there.
Oh no. Right?
You can bet it's protected, too.
Well, I can bet it.
I'm guessing there's some thumb drives somewhere.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing about the digital age. But here's the situation.
When Archibald Cox got fired, the Watergate prosecutors, they literally hid stuff so somebody else couldn't come in and steal it.
Right. No, I mean, and look, lawyers have multiple duties, right? And their duties aren't to their boss. Their duties are to the law, to the inquiry that they're involved in, to, you know, pursuing the facts in a case like this, because they aren't merely lawyers, they're also investigators. So all that comes into play. But the core question you're asking of, you know, what if he engineers a removal of Mueller at this point, right, when so much has come out and so much more is coming? This is, to my mind, a moment that will define the Republican Party, you know, going into the future. There's not a way that you kind of push this one under the rug, like, or say, well, Trump's doing that, we're focused over here doing something else. No, that becomes a central question of your times. Do you have a lawless president? If you do, how do you hold them to account? And at that point, there will be a few Republicans, I'm quite convinced, who step up and say, this guy's got to be held to account. You know, and there's only really one next step on that, and that is to begin the impeachment inquiry in the House. Now, the question is, does Paul Ryan block that? The likely answer is yes, of course. He's been incredibly loyal to Trump. But at that point, then my sense is, you know, you'll have your TV pundits will say, oh, yeah, that'll rally the Republican base. Well, the Republican base isn't very big at this point. It's not as big as it once was. And Trump is wrong. The independents aren't concerned about this. They aren't, you know, bothered that Michael Cohen's office was raided. The independents are, by most polling, moving away from the guy. And so you end up in a situation where it will be a political decision for most Republicans. For a few, it will be a moral choice, and they'll do the right thing. But for most Republicans, it will be a political decision. And this is where it's going to get complicated and weird, because there will be meetings in back rooms and, you know, Capitol offices where they're weighing the consequences, where they're weighing all the politics of this. And I don't know that they've got a good out here. The right thing to do is to act to constrain and hold the president to account. The politically right thing to do is more complicated than that, because we're before the primary season, and it is absolutely possible that within some Republican primaries, people that went after Trump could get in trouble, right? And so I think they're going to be wrestling with all this. And the final thing that I would put into the mix here is that there's chaos in Republican leadership in the House right now. Politico yesterday had a lead story on the maneuvering to replace Ryan as Speaker of the House. And so, you know, Ryan himself, I don't think he's standing on very strong ground. And then the final element of this, just the last thing to put on the cake, they assume that the tax cuts were going to provide them with some sort of, you know, superhero protective uniform, that even though you had all this trouble with Trump, that when people, you know, did their taxes and saw that this Congress had just given them the store, and now they're going to be, everybody's going to be, you know, living a luxurious life because they don't have to pay taxes anymore. I think they actually assumed that was going to happen. There's no evidence that people are, like, all excited about the tax cut. A, because most of them aren't getting very much.
People aren't noticing it in their paychecks.
That's what I'm telling you. And they're not going to notice it when they're doing their taxes. And B, the incredible reporting in recent days on how big the deficits is and how big it's going to get. So at the end of the day, they're out there without what they thought would be the protection of the tax cut. They have unstable leadership. They have a moral question that they may not be able to answer, and a political question that is complex, to say the least. And so I actually think it could create a genuine chaos within the Republican caucus in Congress, where people end up going all sorts of different directions. And I do believe at this critical stage in an election year, that's about the worst place you could be.
You know, for the corporate Republicans that are left, I think there's a little part of them that would just love to see Mueller succeed.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because the trade policies of the Trump administration, you know, they hate Peter Navarro.
and Lighthouser and all those.
Right.
Yeah. No, here's the bottom line. There's a group of corporate Republicans. And can I add to you, a group of corporate Democrats who would really love it if somehow Mueller dropped a piece of paper that just sent Trump out, you know, that just closed the deal. Trump had to go, right? And it would be perfect for them if Trump resigned and Congress didn't have to act, right, in any kind of way. But here's a little kind of insight for you, Sly. You can do with it what you want. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen like that. Mueller isn't going to, you know, take Trump down with one piece of paper. Mueller may, in fact, create the route by which Trump could be impeached or by which Trump could be held to account in some other way. But it's not going to be done, you know, with one press conference on some morning in mid-April.
Stand by. We'll
so
talk.
So the Republicans don't have a way out on this that I can see.
Stand by. We'll talk more with John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation at slysoffice.com.
I want to thank all the labor unions here in Dane County that help keep slysoffice.com up and going so you keep up to date, whether it be the Madison Firefighters, Local 311, or the Madison Teamsters, Local 695, or our friends at Madison Teachers Incorporated. These are some of the most active local unions who organize, and constantly stand up for workers. Thank you from slysoffice.com.
We're talking to John Nichols from the Capital Times at slysoffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers. Great local sponsors like Madison Computer Works and S&R Remodeling. So I've got some interesting clips. Last night was an amazing night for television. You know, some of this stuff on the Russia probe sometimes becomes a little mind-numbing, but when something happens, there's always some great quotable people on TV, including Stormy Daniels' lawyer, Michael Avenatti.
When we filed this case about 4 or 5 weeks ago, you know, a lot of people mocked us. A lot of people mocked my client. I wonder if some of those people are laughing now. The FBI just raided the personal attorney for the president's offices over the exact matter that we have brought to the forefront and brought to the attention of the American people. I don't think Michael Cohen's laughing tonight. I don't think the president's laughing tonight.
We know the president.
No. Look, you know, we were talking off air before we came on here, and one of the things I suggested was that a lot of people initially did kind of laugh off the Stormy Daniels developments because it almost seemed like, you know, punchline for late night comedy, the president and the porn star and all this. But there were also folks very early on who suggested that this issue of the payment to Stormy Daniels shortly before the election, for a variety of reasons, was going to turn out to be a dramatically bigger issue that would touch on all sorts of legal challenges, certainly for Michael Cohen, but also for the Trump inner circle and perhaps the president himself. And that is proving to be the case. And I have to believe that, you know, many people have been impressed with
Michael Avenatti's
attorney.
Yeah.
Avenatti, who's done such a good job on TV and seems to have such great confidence in dealing with this. And I would venture to suggest that he might not be there simply by chance, that there might have been a point early on where there was a sense that this was a much bigger case than just wrangling between a president and his paramour, because he has always displayed an immense confidence in talking about where this was going to end up, what they were going to do with it, what was going to happen. And as he suggested in that clip you just played, events are proving him to be quite correct.
So, well, got another good clip here for you. Here we go. This is Steve Schmidt, who was...
I knew you were going to get to him.
Yeah, Steve Schmidt, who, of course, was John McCain's campaign manager.
Here's the analogy I would use, Nicole. It's a person who goes to the doctor and says, I'm not feeling well, and I have some stomach pain. And the doctor does some tests, and they come back, and they say, we have some bad news. We looked, and what we see is cancer is everywhere. And in the same way, I think what the prosecutors have done is that the empowering of the special counsel, that they've looked inside the Trump organization, they've looked at this collusion issue, but what they found is there is corruption everywhere. Everywhere they look, from the former national security advisor who is implicated in a potential plot to kidnap a U.S. person from U.S. soil to transfer that person to Turkey, or sitting on the inaugural dais and trying to do a nuclear deal with Russian interests, and the people that have lied about contacts with Russians, the Russians that have been indicted, other people that have been involved in financial transactions with Russians, and who knows what Michael Cohen's role is and involvement is in the Trump Tower Moscow project. So we don't know what we don't know, but what's increasingly clear to me is anywhere you look inside this Trump organization, it appears to be dirty. For example, how is it possible that suddenly, on the precipice of a default, there's a $1.2 billion bailout for Jared Kushner's 666 Fifth Avenue? Where did the $27 million from the inaugural committee disappear to with regard to Melania Trump's friend? To say nothing of Scott Pruitt, to say nothing of the loans from Citi or Apollo Group in excess of $500 million to Jared Kushner, to say nothing of the Kushner organizations trying to sell access in Asia to the White House, or for the Trump organization to send a letter to the government of Panama saying that unless they get relief in the private business issue in Panama between the Trump Hotel and a Panamanian business partner, that it'll anger the president and there'll be retribution on Panama. So everywhere you look, there seems to be the stench of corruption. And I think this is just another piece of evidence and what we're going to see unfold, that before very long, the extent of the shambolic Trump organization's corruption and the dirtiness around this administration.
Woo! That's sticking the knife in and in and out and in and in and out and in and out.
Do you think he may have thought about that before he went?
I think he did.
Or did that just occur to him? That's, you know, it was excellently done, but it seemed to be like, you know, the guy had really kind of, you know, thought that through in some good ways. And let me just offer you very quickly the comparison there. In the previous segment, you played Donald Trump's response to finding out about the Cohen raid. And Trump's response was rambling. He kept going back to disgraceful and, you know, remember Hillary Clinton and, you know, all this, you know, kind of pointless stuff. Trump probably said 1,000, 2,000 words, of which, you know, we'd be lucky if a couple of them were relevant, and there was virtually no facts. Here you have the alternative with Schmidt looking at the Trump organization, and there's not repetition. There's not, you know, kind of bumbling and rambling. Probably said about as many words, and they were all facts. And that's what's devastating at the end of the day, because I don't care how Republican you might be, how conservative you might be, unless you're delusional, at a certain point, you know, a guy, your former party's presidential campaign manager, coming up and running through the massive corruption associated with Trump, fact after fact after fact, detail after detail after detail, versus the president going, it's disgraceful. You know, the balance is against the president on this one.
Let me ask you how this is all affecting races in Wisconsin. We now have two special elections. We have a U.S. Senate race. The other day, Eric Hovde announced that he's not getting in the race, and evidently it has something to do with he's got a grandchild that's going to be born this year. Well, that evidently was the tipping point.
Our family's been around the Hovde family for a long time. My mom and Eric's dad were on the yearbook at East High together, and so they are a close-knit family, and I'm sure that he's very excited about a grandchild coming. By the same token, he was by far their most credible potential candidate. People need to understand that. He is someone with deep Republican roots. He's pretty smart guy who's reads a lot of books, quite intellectual, thinks about things. He's a capable campaigner who almost displaced Tommy Thompson in the 2012 primary. And so losing him from this race, having him decide this just wasn't the time, is I think a real blow to the Republicans. In fact, I would argue that losing Eric Hussey as a potential candidate at this point, when you've got Leah Vukmir and Nicholson going at each other, right, in the way that they are, you know, I think the party took a real blow there, and people should understand that. And I think they should also understand that I believe that somebody as politically savvy as Eric Hovde weighed the circumstances of this year and decided that it just wasn't that great a year to run for the U.S. Senate.
Well, plus, he didn't have a plutocrat able to, you know, he's got some serious money, but he didn't have he doesn't have a plutocrat to fund him the way Leah and Kevin do.
Plutocrat from Illinois or plutocrat from Kansas, right? Yeah.
There's one from Beloit. Yeah. Don't forget about the one from Beloit, too.
Hovde would have had to spend Wisconsin money,
right,
on that race.
Well, sort of Wisconsin money.
Yeah, but here's the bottom line. He does have money, not a lot, not by comparison to some of these other folks, but he had enough to start a credible campaign. In the scheme of things, to position himself as somebody who really was an appealing contender, he chose not to run. And I think now the Republicans are left with genuine second string. I mean, there's no other way to say it. There's people trying to pump up these two candidates, Vukmir and Nicholson, but, you know, I don't see the evidence that it's working. And I do think that Tammy Baldwin still faces a tough race. I don't doubt that. In fact, it's probably one of the tougher races of Democratic incumbents this year. But I would invite people to take a look at what happened in Ohio, where Sherrod Brown, who was thought to face, you know, one of the toughest races around, has, because key players dropped out and because of the moment that we're in and all the developments, you know, Sherrod Brown's starting to look like a very viable contender for re-election.
Yes.
I don't suggest that Tammy Baldwin's going to get all the way to that by, you know, right away, but it's a good thing for candidates for re-election like Tammy Baldwin when your most appealing opponents decide not to run against you.
Sherrod Brown is running very much in favor of the tariffs on aluminum and steel, some of the actions the president has taken against China. Tammy Baldwin has been, I wouldn't say circumspect of them, but she's been far more cautious about it.
Yeah. I think, you know, there are differences between the states. And one thing to recognize is that in Ohio, where you've got Youngstown and Lorain and other places, which literally I've spent a lot of time in Lorain. I used to cover Lorain. It's devastating. There, in that city, you had mile after mile of steel mill and, you know, steel services, you know, all sorts of ancillary businesses. And so much of it's been shut down, or at least is, you know, way dialed back. And so you have, in Ohio, a place where steel tariffs are very, very, very popular in and of themselves. But then also, remember, Sherrod Brown's a very smart man. He is one of the key players on trade for a very long time. And so when he says that there's value in this and that there is a point to this, he's right. I don't think Trump is doing tariffs in the right way. I think Trump has a minimal understanding, and he's done it in a bumbling way. He does it without a industrial policy, without, you know, any of the underpinning that might make something like that really work. And so Baldwin has been reticent, and I think that her reticence is rooted in an understanding that Trump isn't doing this in a smart or effective way. But I do think, you know, I would encourage, you know, thinking Democrats, and I think Tammy Baldwin's one of them, to speak, you know, openly and relatively bluntly about tariffs and about the need to use them in smart and effective ways. It's because Trump is doing it doesn't mean that the tool should be, you know, completely abandoned or thrown off. That's not the way to think about international, you know, economic arrangements and international trade. And I'll emphasize to you that the smartest leaders in the world and savvy leaders that Americans point to as, you know, very, very competent players on the global stage use tariffs
where
necessary.
Yeah. We talked to Congressman Pocan the other day, and the Progressive Caucus has come out with a statement in support of smart tariffs. And what he's concerned about is that the corporatists are taking this moment to sort of paint a picture of, you know, well, this is Trump doing this. So the progressive move is to keep free trade going just the way it is. And obviously, many of the hosts on MSNBC have echoed that.
Yeah, it's just not right. It's a foolish move politically. It's also a foolish move economically. If you suggest for a second, as a country that is a very wealthy country with a lot of resources and a lot of lingering and remaining industrial base, that being the United States, that you will not go to the mat to protect industries and to, you know, make sure that there's a fair global trading system. You cede space in a way that is incredibly irresponsible.
Your phone's cutting out just a little bit there, John.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay, so would it be fair to say that there are some Americans that benefit from China cheating the United States?
Investors.
Yeah.
There are, without a doubt. You know, and there are a lot of people who have benefited from the current global trade system, which has been devastating for U.S. industries, for U.S. workers, for U.S. communities. And they invest in multinational companies that treat nation states as, you know, places on a chessboard. You move this from here to there, and you have no loyalty to anyone. You just have loyalty to making money. There's a chunk of people that exist, but the fact of the matter is, they don't make their decisions based on what is good for American workers, American communities, and ultimately for a sustainable and functional American economy. They make their decisions based on, you know, a bottom line, where they're going to make the most money. And you know, if that's the interest group, quote unquote, that you want to steer your politics toward, I understand why Democrats or Republicans might do it, because those investors and those billionaires and those CEOs give campaign contributions. I understand that. But boy, you know, if the people find out, if the great mass of people find out that you're siding with a small group of investors against, you know, really the interest of the great mass of Americans in the long term, I don't think you're going to be rewarded for that politically, or at least I hope you won't be, because that's not the kind of politics we should have in the United States.
John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation. Thanks for coming to SlysOffice.com.
SlysOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.
You know, we work hard every day. In mills and mines, hospitals and schools, in office buildings, pharmacies and shipyards, factories and forests, in squad cars, ambulances and taxicabs. We do all kinds of jobs in Iowa, Wisconsin, Illinois, and all across the United States and Canada. We build the things that build our country. We do things that keep our country going, support our families and our communities. We have the courage to stand up even when no one else does. We have the strength to fight for what's right, for our families and for yours. We're your friends, your neighbors, your sisters and brothers. We're more than 1 million members strong. We stand in solidarity with workers in every continent on the globe. We're the United Steelworkers Union, and every day we fight for you. Please join our fight. Visit usw.org or like us at facebook.com/steelworkers.